Pennsylvania-born composer Julia Wolf won a Pulitzer Prize for her Coal Region oratorio titled Anthracite Fields. She explains, "My aim with Anthracite Fields is to honor the people who persevered and endured in the Pennsylvania Anthracite Coal Region during a time when the industry fueled the nation, and to reveal a bit about who we are as American workers." In the first movement, Foundation, the singers chant the names of miners that appeared on a Pennsylvania Mining Accident Index from 1869 through 1916. The list is sadly long. I chose only the Johns with one syllable last names in alphabetical order. The piece ends with a setting of the very colorful multisyllabic names. The miners were largely from immigrant families, and the diversity of ethnicity is heard in the names. At the center of Foundation is text from geological descriptions of coal formation. Words of composer Julia Wolf about her Pulitzer Prize-winning piece, Anthracite Fields. And there is something very powerful about hearing the names of the miners one after another. The cumulative effect can be overwhelming. So many injured, so many killed, too many injured, too many killed, and yet we're hearing the chorus sing out names of individuals, people with families and hobbies and gardens and dreams. The movement is titled Foundation, and Julia Wolf uses the word in many senses. The music evokes the geological foundation of the region that produced the coal that would eons later be mined. Coal that would be mined here and develop an entire way of life in the region. And foundation in the sense, too, then, for the U.S. Industrial Revolution and its historical impact. As it happens, the founders of an organization dedicated to honoring the region's mine workers, their lives, and the area's history took as their name the Anthracite Heritage Foundation. The foundation is based in the Wyoming Valley, governed by a board of trustees, and working with King's College in Wilkes-Barre to carry out its mission. Dr. Robert Walensky, Professor Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and Donald Sanderson, co-founder of the AHF, are board members of the Anthracite Heritage Foundation, and they paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the group. Dr. Walensky.
The Anthracite Heritage Foundation has had as a mission the remembering of our anthracite mining heritage. We have a number of projects. Our main project is the Miners Memorial Park on Wilkes-Barre's Public Square, immediately adjacent to the new Kings on the Square building, the old Ramada Hotel. And we have other ideas and projects, one of the main ones being the annual Mining History Month, because we've already got proposals for January 2018, as you know, Mining History Month, which is about to be renamed Anthracite Heritage Month to give it a broader perspective, not just mining. We're going to do that for the first time this coming January. So that's why we're here, to talk about the Anthracite Heritage Foundation and its many different projects.
Don, tell us about how the idea came about to formalize the efforts in this way.
Jim Burke and I, we used to be next-door neighbors in Bear Creek, and about 6 years ago or so, we were sitting in his backyard, started talking about miners, and we were both of the age where we could remember miners, Both my grandfathers were miners, but I didn't know them. In any event, there were a lot of things in the area, and monuments and museums and the anthracite mine tour and some other mine tours, but nobody talked about the miners as individuals and their lives and what they went through and what they had to go through to mine this precious material. It turned out the material that had tremendous historic significance in possibly winning the Civil War and things like that. The anthracite coal. And the anthracite coal comes right from the northeastern Pennsylvania counties. So it was historically the power of the Industrial Revolution. In addition, there were almost 35,000 miners killed in mining accidents, not counting black lung, but in actual mining accidents in about 100 years. So it was a terribly, terribly dangerous occupation. And they got no credit for it. But nobody knew what they were doing except other miners. So Jim and I sort of took the model of Ellis Island. That Ellis Island has the model of putting people on a wall of honor. So we came up with this wall of honor scheme. And after a few false starts of trying to actually do a museum, when Kings bought the Ramada, Jim had been affiliated with, he had been the chairman of the board of Kings for quite some time. And so he approached Kings and said, there's a little piece of land over here you don't seem to be needing. How about letting us do this thing? So we designed it and financed it, and there it is. And we are now collecting names of individual miners and putting them on a wall of honor. And we have just almost 1,500 names right now out of a little over 2,000 people in our registry. And we think it was just starting. So that's the history.
Jim Burke had a bit of a motto which stated that we need to have an attitude of gratitude for our anthracite forebears. The great majority of people in northeastern Pennsylvania are here, whether they know it or not, because of some aspect of coal. I mean, it was either mining it, or it was shipping it, or it was making overalls for the miners, or chain cable for the miners. It was the industry. I mean, we had 120,000 mine workers in around 1900 in the three anthracite fields, the southern, the middle, and the northern. And of course, Scranton-Wilkes-Barre is the northern, the most productive, the largest, and the wealthiest of the three fields. And the attitude of gratitude is what has permeated our mission, because we want to acknowledge the individual miner and the sacrifice, and the miners' families and the miners' communities, of course, but to put it out there so we can all appreciate. And the wall of honor is one way that any individual who has a miner in their background can enter it into the registry at the Anthracite Heritage Foundation's website. And we put up panels every quarter, or the plan has been to do it quarterly. It's been quarterly so far, and there's another batch going up. And I've submitted four of my ancestors' names on both sides, including my father, who worked at the Harry E. Colliery in Sewerville after the war, and before the war, he worked underground at the Malby Colliery. And grandfathers on both sides were miners, and they came here a little over 100 years ago. And if they didn't take that incredible chance, that incredible adventure, but I don't think they saw it as much as an adventure, as a worrisome undertaking, I wouldn't be here. And here I am, just, you know, the second generation born in this country, as fortunate as all can be because of what they did. So we're motivated by those kind of values, too, because Jim Burke's family, Don's family, my family, Joe Radowski's on the board of directors, his family, and so forth and so on. We are deeply committed to this because it is deep within our own biographies.
Don, we're on radio. Describe it for us.
Well, the wall has a centerpiece of a large miner's face, and then it says the Wall of Honor. And each time we get about 140 to 150 names, Kings has a plaque cast in a foundry that's about 2 foot by 3 foot. And so all of those names are put on each plaque. We are getting four more plaques, the four last plaques, this October 2nd, and that will be 12. And we have enough room on that wall for 6,000 names. And my thought is we should not have any difficulty getting 6,000 names. We can walk down the street, and I do this sometimes, walk down the street in Wilkes-Barre and tap a stranger on the shoulder and say, was there a miner in your family? And the majority of the time, there'll be yes. And I do that every once in a while just for fun. And sometimes not here. I was on an airplane coming from Colorado, and I started talking to one of the stewards on the plane. I said, was there a miner in your family? He said, yeah. I said, am I? I said, I'm from DuPont. And I gave him an application. We're scattered all over the place.
And what's been the initial reaction? What do people say when they come upon the monument?
I was over there about a month ago, and two carloads of people drove up from New Jersey, and two elderly women who had miners there. There were about, 12 people or so, went into the park, had their pictures taken by the name, touching the name. We have a grandson in Boston. I found out that my son's father-in-law came from Avoca, and they now live, and he has a business in New York. And I was a miner. Yes, my grandfather was a miner. So on one plaque over there, we have both of my grandfathers, my mother's side and my father's side, and my son's father-in-law's grandfather. So our son has three great-great-grandfather's names on one plaque, three of them.
Pull the lens back and tell us what you think something like this can do for us and the history.
Yeah, well, I think it helps us remember who we are. We have a unique culture here. This is a very unique culture, and I know we know that to some extent. We know it with the linguistic turn. Every region has a dialect. We sometimes make fun of our dialect because, it's the Susquehanna River, as one of my classmates just told me at our reunion. And by the way, we had a high school class reunion, and several of my classmates went to the Miners Memorial and looked at it and took a friend, and the friend is now going to send in the application, which is not only online, by the way. You can get a hand-printed application right inside the King's Lobby, for example, at the King's on the Square building. But it tells us who we are, to get back to your question, Erica, and it helps us understand that we all have a history, and you can learn a lot from that history. You can learn about some of your own reactions to situations. For example, Northeastern Pennsylvania, because of its mining heritage, experienced a great deal of conflict. I mean, there was constant strikes, constant labor management conflict, constant labor-labor conflict because you had competing unions, constant ethnic conflict, community conflict. It became symbolized in our sports conflicts, you know, when Swerville played Kingston or when West Scranton played Central and so forth. Bitter rivalries. Central Catholic, my alma mater, and Kingston played Scranton Prep. I mean, that was a serious contest. And what does this mean for us? Well, it shapes personalities. I mean, we are cultural beings. Yes, we're individuals. That is true. But it's not the whole truth. We come from someplace. A family. A socioeconomic class. A region. We have a history. And we need to know that history. When you are in a different part of the world and you see how they are. I mean, I now live in the Midwest, in Wisconsin, for the past 40 years, but of course I'm here quite a lot. The Midwest is very different, very different. Nowhere near in rural Wisconsin that sense of conflict. A different ethnic population. Very few Irish, very few Italians in central Wisconsin. Very few Welsh and English and Irish. Mainly Norwegians and Germans and Poles and French. A different culture. And so I've had to live in two cultures. I consider myself bicultural. One anecdote is I came up here one time I called a miner in advance to do an interview about the Knox Mine disaster, about which, you know, I've had an interest. So I drove up and arrived at his door the next day, and I went into his house and we sat down and I said, I'd like you to talk to me, as I said in my phone call, about the Knox Mine disaster. And he said, the Knox Mine disaster? Don't even talk to me about the Knox Mine disaster. Well, in my Midwestern frame, I said, oh my goodness, I've offended this fellow. This is a great misunderstanding. This is going on in 0.2 seconds. And then he starts talking. And I suddenly realize that in this culture, don't even talk to me about that means, boy, do I care a lot about that. Boy, do I know a lot about that. Sit down, I'm going to tell you about it. Culture matters. History matters. And the anthracite history, as captured by the Miners Park and the Wall of Honor, is a monument to who we are, and hopefully will lead young people and middle-aged people and older people to dig into our marvelous historical past. We have as good a history as anybody, Erica. I had an old friend that used to say, well, they might tie us, but they won't beat us. Well, they might tie us, but our history is as good as anybody's history.
One of the things we hadn't mentioned till now is that in our registry, in our miners' registry, there is an opportunity to tell the story of the miner, of the individual miner. Now, not everyone takes us up on that. But the thing that I've been just dumbfounded with is some of the stories. And some of the stories are very, very painful. You know, whole families wiped out in one blast, you know, a father and a son, and just stories like that. A story came across my desk of a young man on his 14th birthday from Old Forge. He was working in the mines, and his parents said, "Don't go in today." She said, "You know, take the day off. It's your birthday." He said, "No, I'm saving up for a bicycle." He went in, and the roof fell in, and that killed him that day, on his birthday. Stuff like that, story after story after story after story, because it was such a dangerous occupation. And then some ugly stories, too, about the labor and management that was crude at one time. Jim and I had talked about this all the time. And my grandfather Sanderson came here on October 25th, 1885, and from a mining family in Yorkshire, in England. And I had this kind of dreamed-up thought of a playbill someplace in Yorkshire that said, "Miners, come to Pennsylvania. Come to our mines. We will give you housing. We'll transport you and your children, and we'll guarantee you a job." Now, that sounded pretty good. And they did all that. You know, I'm not talking about the quality, but they did all that. And whether or not my grandfather ever would have saved up enough money to transport himself here with no job, I don't know. I don't think so. So there was the mine owners played a part in our whole development here, our whole local development that we too quick to take sides sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's very true. There was a great deal of exploitation. There was a great deal of conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, this was one of America's first great industries, the anthracite coal industry was. By 1900, the railroads owned almost all the mines here, the big railroads, the Erie, the Delaware and Lackawanna, et cetera. And those were in turn owned by essentially a consortium of J.P. Morgan interests out of New York. So they were owned by the banks, the big banks in New York. And they produced tremendous wealth for not that many people. Yet, they built the steel industry, because you need coal for the steel industry, not so much anthracite. During Civil War, yes, and even the Revolutionary War, yes. But you look at World War I and World War II, I mean, you had to build ships, massive ships, and you had to have the industrial capacity to do that, and anthracite was part of that, part of the railroads, part of the manufacturing base of the country. So it had problems, and yet it did help lift hundreds of thousands out of the poverty they experienced in Yorkshire, or on my side in the Ukraine, where my father's side came from, or Sicily, where my mother's side came from. So you have to have a balanced view on these sorts of things.
And Don, what else is on the website? So we have the application, for example, so that we can submit names and a place to tell the stories. What else do we find there?
There are coming events like Bob's lecture series. There are suggested books to read on anthracite mining. Jim Burke produced a couple of DVDs because he had been in show businesses, you know, and including the Molly Maguire musical that was performed in Wilkes-Barre. And one of the things that we're talking about at our last board meeting is how to, in a sense, ratchet up our miners' memorial to a real memorial, because now that we are into the individual miners, what we would like to do is find a way to memorialize these great tragic events that happened in mines, you know, at the Avondales, the Twin Shafts, those things, and in some way be able to draw people to the memorial on the anniversary of some of those events, and then give special honor or recognition to the victims of those things. And we're looking for ways to do that right now, and that would, in a sense, ratchet up our memorial garden to the next level, which would be recognizing these tragic events.
And speaking of events, Bob, you mentioned the month.
Yeah, Mining History Month really began in 1999 with just a couple events. The Knox Mine Disaster Program, annual at the Anthracite Heritage Museum in Scranton, which has been going on annually since 1999, the 40th anniversary of the Knox disaster, which happened in 1959, January 22nd, our last major mining disaster here, for which there is a brick in the Miners Memorial Park on the ground, along with Avondale and Twin Shaft and Pancoast and maybe one other disaster on the public square there, in the, right next to King's College. And then a few other people said, well, we're doing these events at Scranton. We have an annual memorial mass at St. Joseph's Church in Port Griffith, right near the disaster site. That's now been sold. It's now Beloga's funeral home. But in front of it is the Knox Mine Disaster Historical Marker put up by the State Historical Museum Commission in 1999. And as now that service is at St. John's. And then we go to the historical marker afterwards for a public commemoration. And then we walk down to the disaster site each January. So that's how it began. And then it became a week. We had a few more presentations. And then after 4, 5, 6, 7 years, it became a month. So last year we had 13 events up and down northeastern Pennsylvania from Peckville down to Nanticoke, places in between. And we are right now organizing, and I say we, the Anthracite Heritage Foundation, of which Don and I are on the board. The last few years, we've begun it with the Boy Scouts Mining History Merit Badge, and that will again take place this coming January, kickoff event early in January. We have a proposal to do one on Anthracite Region baseball, because we have 3 or possibly 4 local authors who have written books on local baseball stars, and I've already talked to some of them. These are just topics now. The Lackawanna Historical Society just came into some really good Anthracite-era art, mining history art, and they want to do a program in January. The Luzerne County Historical Society is going to have a program with Mr. Robert Hughes, who is going to do a Johnny Mitchell presentation. John Mitchell, an early labor leader in Anthracite, the strike of 1902. Ethnicity. We're going to do a panel. We've already got, looks like, 4 people going to talk on their ethnic groups' reasons for coming here. How many Polish miners were there here in 1900? We have those data. How many Lithuanian miners? How many Italian miners? We have that data. So we get a sense of that history. Of course, the Knox programs. King's will have its annual Monsignor John J. Curran speaker. We're going to do one someplace, I think up in Lackawanna County, on major anthracite strikes. 1902, 1925, 26, the big one that basically sunk the industry, the longest one. There was one in 1943 during World War II, and the anthracite miners were judged as being unpatriotic for going on strike. So those are among the topics. I mean, that's just a taste of about a dozen to 14 topics in different, you know, Plymouth and in Scranton and different places up and down the valley to focus the whole month. Now, last year, the Pennsylvania Cable Network broadcast 3 of the presentations statewide. So we're getting beyond just this region to show that we do have a history up here. We're not just a gritty coal town, a gritty old dusty coal town. We're moving into the future, but we also acknowledge our past.
Dr. Robert Wolensky, Professor Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, and Donald Sanderson, co-founder of the AHF, both board members of the Anthracite Heritage Foundation, speaking about the foundation and its mission, inviting listeners to enroll relatives who were mine workers in the Mining Memorial Registry online at ahfdn.org, ahfdn.org. Individual names are to be permanently displayed, as we heard, on the Wall of Honor, and that process is already underway at the Miners Park on Public Square in downtown Wilkes-Barre. There is a modest enrollment fee, and you can find out the details online at ahfdn.org, and that's the website for the Anthracite Heritage Foundation, ahfdn.org. And then look ahead to the January month dedicated to anthracite and its heritage here in northeastern Pennsylvania and the entire anthracite area. It's the foundation, ahfdn.org, ahfdn.org. from Anthracite Fields, the Pulitzer Prize-winning oratorio by Julia Wolf, featuring the Bang on a Can All-Stars and the choir of Trinity Wall Street, Julian Wachner conducting. And we are hearing the first movement, Foundation, the singers chanting the names of miners that appeared on a Pennsylvania Mining Accident Index, 1869 through 1916. You're tuned to Art Scene on WVIA. We have a piece titled In Memoriam now, Opus 65 by Max Bruch, an adagio for violin and orchestra. Salvatore Accardo is the violinist with the Gewandhaus Orchestra Leipzig under the direction of Kurt Mazur on WVIA.